Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
Millions of Americans are looking for effective ways to manage their weight, but finding the right support can feel confusing and time-consuming. Orderly Meds offers a convenient online experience that connects you with licensed medical providers to explore GLP-1 treatment options from home. The process is simple. Complete your information online, connect with a provider, and learn what options may be right for you. No waiting rooms, no complicated scheduling, just a modern, streamlined experience designed around convenience. Visit orderlymeds.com/podcasts to learn more today. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. One more time, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This is the High Hopes Podcast. High Hopes. On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP. The crowd was singing high hopes, smiling through a broken nose. Oh, high hopes, high hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Well, that kind of sucked. Welcome on in. It is the it's the High Hopes Podcast. Presented by Miller Lite. Jack Fritz filling in. There's no yo with no seltzer here, as he is, I'm sure, watching a lot of movies and enjoying his vacation, as he has seen fish, and I think he's going to see fish again this weekend. Filling in for him, who I guess Tucker's filling in for me, is, well, Tucker Bagley. What's happening, Tucker?
I haven't seen fish this week, and I don't plan on seeing them again this weekend, so we're good there. Not a lot of fish when James isn't here.
I know. That's the biggest passion in life is the band Fish. So, Phils lose 2-3 to the Dodgers. A series in which Ohtani, Snell, Yamamoto, Glasnow didn't start any of the games. I respect Robleski, but he's not exactly those guys. They get shut down pretty much by Eric Lauer. And here we are starting the second half with back-to-back home losses or home series losses, and they are now 8-9 in July, which definitely checks out. They can't run the bases. The offense is struggling. The bullpen's a disaster. We'll get into Mattingly. Tucker, besides that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Yeah, I mean, besides that, the rest of it's also kind of abysmal. I mean, I think you said they're 8-9 in their last 17 games. They're 500 since June 27th. They're four games back of the Dodger or the Braves for the NL East, which is the furthest back they've been in quite a while. And I don't know, everything you've seen from the last two series against the Mets, against the Dodgers, is everything that we worried about this team, even dating back to the preseason when you thought about maybe what could go wrong with this team that prevents them from making the postseason. Well, you see it now. The back end of the starting pitching hasn't held up. The guys in the bullpen that you were counting on to maybe make a leap haven't necessarily done that. And then offensively, I don't really know who you can count on right now. I mean, Trey Turner obviously has bounced back since a really, really rough first 3 months of the season. But your all-stars, the guys that you were counting on, have all struggled. The rest of your lineup hasn't necessarily stepped up. And now you're 2-4. Your playoff odds right now, according to Baseball Reference, are at 50%. It's not ideal. As we look, you know, what are we, 10 days away from the trade deadline? I mean, Everything we did trade deadline roulette a couple weeks ago. Now you need everything. Now it's like, oh, maybe I need a refill. No, it really seems like you need a lot more than just one guy.
So it's down to, because I wasn't it like 80-some percent the other day with him making the playoffs? And now,
I think it was. I think that's where it topped off.
Yeah, I mean, different sites obviously have like different formulations.
So like they still have a 20% lead over like the Pirates are next at like 30%. So like it's still comfortably ahead of the people behind them, but it's still jarring to see that it's basically a coin flip.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think playoff percentages are the thing I maybe hate the most in the world. Besides, maybe I hate the Apple broadcasts when they have home run probability. It's like, who's that for? There's not a single
person. RBI probability.
Ah, it drives me nuts. It makes my skin crawl. It really does. So, to be honest, I haven't even really considered them missing the playoffs yet. Like, I am still, they'll be fine. All I care about is like what they're going to do in October. And that's where kind of my fear comes from. But, you know, the thing that is irking me and the thing that I need Don Mattingly and these guys to come together and figure out is like the lack of quality baseball they're playing. And watching these two teams this series, Dodgers have a bunch of high-paid stars too. Like we talk all the time about, oh, the Dodgers are ruining sport because they can buy everyone. And like, yeah, they can buy anyone they want, essentially. But the Mets can also buy whoever they want. The Blue Jays can buy whoever we want. The Phillies have one of the five highest payrolls in baseball. The thing that separates Dodgers from everyone else is they do literally everything well. They pitch well, they field well, they run the bases well. Behind the scenes, they have unbelievable player development. They get the most out of these guys. They trade for a guy in Tommy Edman, who I really liked Tommy Edman a couple of years ago, but it kind of fallen off, and he has an OPS over 900. Max, and this is like 10 years ago, but Max Muncy, who all of a sudden, they're not rec specs anymore, because it's not the 1980s, but he gets the sunglasses with prescription in them and he turns into Barry Bonds. Max Muncy has the second most home runs in Dodgers history. Like after Eric Karros, I think now after last night.
That was a shocking thing to see.
I couldn't believe it. Like the Dodgers are the freaking Dodgers. You know what I mean? So, you know, Max Muncy was a long time ago, but they find Max Muncy off the scrap heap and turn him into this version of Max Muncy. Miguel Rojas was their hero last year. They signed him out of they can spend a lot of money, and that's true. But what separates the Dodgers from everyone else is they play really freaking good baseball. And in watching this team this series and watching the difference of the quality of baseball and watching Bryson Stott just run to third base for God knows what reason, seeing JT, we've dissected that play a million times now. I don't think we need to relitigate it. But the little things come back to bite you. They turn into big things in October. And like Don Mattingly, when he took over in that first month and a half, 2 months, it was, we need to play better baseball. And it felt like there was a different level of accountability and a different level of locked in. And it feels like ever since they settled into the season and got back in and made a push for the NL East and are in the driver's seat of a wild card spot, they've let that stuff slip. They've slipped on that stuff. And I need Don Mattingly and I need the players. I hope that this was a let's look in the mirror, realize we're not the best team of all time, and let's get back to doing what we did to dig ourselves out of this, because this is how second halves of 24 happen, where you just can't flip a switch and bang, here comes the big run. So, I'm not putting it on a manager because I don't think that's fair. I think it's on these guys, but I thought he had a good grasp of them for a month and a half, 2 months. And this last month, they've been slipping. And I need Mattingly to shore it up.
Yeah, I mean, really, since he declared that he wanted the job, things haven't necessarily gone that well for Don Mattingly. But you mentioned, like, the Dodgers, just watching them play, they carry themselves like smart baseball players. And even all the guys that they give big money to, like, Mookie Betts isn't having a great season, but he makes winning plays. He had two home runs on Monday night. But, like, they gave Kyle Tucker a ton of money. He's not having a good season. Pretty sure he went 0-for in the series. I mean, Freddie Freeman's a robot and is going to hit until he's like 70 years old, and Shohei Ohtani's a monster. But, like, they have guys who are overpaid and underperforming, but they still make smart baseball plays. Like, just, I mean, even like the wheel play that they made last year in the postseason to get Castellanos, the JT play, like, that was still a great play defensively. I mean, the things they do, the little things they do, you don't see the Phillies doing that really ever. And, you know, I don't know if it's because the Phillies are loaded with bad defensive players, and as a result, they struggle on that side of the field. But yeah, I mean, I think for a team that, you know, really going into the season and going into this series specifically, the Dodgers are the team you're trying to catch, right? The Dodgers are the team that you're comparing yourself to. This is a real measuring stick series. And you came up small and you really lacked focus for most of the last two games.
And what I don't get, Tucker, is, dude, JT's 35. Stott is 28. And listen, those two are like their best base runners. So it's actually surprising that they were the two. I just don't get how you've played baseball this long. You know how to play the game. Like, you guys are old too. The Dodgers and the Phillies, I think, are the two oldest rosters in baseball. How is there not the baseball IQ? Like, how has that not been developed over all these years of playing the game? That's what sticks out to me. It's like, are those guys just cerebral, you know? And I think Mookie's cerebral. I think Freeman's cerebral. Like, I think that they have Miguel Rojas, Edmund, like, they're all smart. It's just, how are our guys? I feel like I've been watching a just dumb baseball team really since 2010, like 2010, yeah. 2011. I haven't watched a crisp, fundamental, good baseball team. We've watched good baseball, but, like, actually playing the game, in it feels like an entire, like, the poor next generation of kids, Tucker, that have sat down and consumed Phillies baseball for the last 6 years and try and say, hey, you know, that's how you play. When we grew up, we had Utley and Rollins telling you how to play.
Well, that's what's funny is, like, that great team, and obviously it gets overshadowed because of how amazing they were offensively. You had MVPs and Hall of Fame talent offensively. They were so unbelievable defensively, especially up the middle, right? Like, with Ruiz, with Rollins, with Utley, with Victorino at center field.
Worth.
You had Feliz and Worth. Like, you had unbelievable defensive players. It just got kind of glossed over because you could also score 6, 7, 8 runs a game. And yet, like, this team is just stupid. And, like, watching JT do that, like, I almost couldn't even get mad. It's not like it's a young kid where it's like, oh, he doesn't know better. He should know better. And he does know better. And I don't know, like, I don't want to turn this into a Bryce Harper thing, but how many people on the planet have played more baseball than Bryce Harper? Probably no one, right? Like, he's been in the big leagues for 14 years, played more baseball than anybody, you know, little league, high school, junior college, minors, whatever. He's not a great base runner. He's not necessarily a cerebral guy in the field making savvy plays. Like, just across the board, this team as constructed, they're not a very smart team. Like, they don't do savvy things. I don't see them do things and go, wow, can't believe they did that. Their shortstop has maybe the worst instincts I've ever seen from a major league shortstop. It's just, It's crazy to me that they found a collection of the dumbest baseball players you've ever seen and put them all on the field. And they still win 90 games a year.
I know. That's what they are. They are the Phillies are such a conundrum because you don't think they're exactly brilliant. Really, it comes down to this. They have three unbelievable starting pitchers that help them every three out of every five games. You hope that one of the other guys can do it. Now, Nola, they have a good record in his stars, even though he has been good. And you just have to hope that the one of the stars is hot at the right time and the offense is probably going to be okay. But they lost a series, and I mentioned it in the open. They lost a series where you didn't face Otani. By the way, Otani got three hits, but they weren't impactful. Like, he didn't hit a home run again, which is crazy.
I'm kind of tired of buying tickets to see the Dodgers just to see Otani.
I know. But
he went 1-for-12 in the series.
1-for-12? Okay. Yeah. And again, no home runs. And I think what makes it even more disheartening, obviously the way they played was annoying and looking relatively outclassed. And it was annoying they had a lead in all three games, only winning one of them. Also annoying. But when you try to think about this in a postseason sense, like what's it going to be like in the postseason? You're not facing Eric Lauer. Wroblewski will probably be in the bullpen. You know, like they didn't face the guys that they're going to face in October. They didn't see Glasnow, Snell, Yamamoto, or Otani. Those guys will be starting for the Dodgers because they have the ability to just kick their feet up in the regular season, win a million games, and hey, let's say just keep saying you have a neck injury, and we'll see you in October. That was the scary part about this series, is that they couldn't even take advantage of the Dodgers' backups.
No, and the Dodgers did face the Phillies' horses, right? Like, they beat Wheeler 2-1. They scored 7 on a night where Sanchez started, which he only gave up 3 in 5 1/3. And then obviously, you know, you didn't get Lizardo, who'd be your third starter. But I mean, you were at full strength and they're kind of coasting, right? Which they have really in the regular season the last couple of years. And yeah, it is worrisome for a team that, you know, you look at for the postseason. You kind of heard it a lot during the All-Star break. Well, you know, the Dodgers are the favorite in the National League, but you know, you have the Braves, you have the Phillies, you have the Brewers. That's the next group trying to go up and challenge them. And the way the Phillies played this week against the Dodgers, I don't know if they really belong in that group right now.
Yeah, I agree. And the tough part about where we're at with them and why, like, there needs to be some tough conversations, I think, hopefully after the game last night, maybe today on the off day and tomorrow, and trying to you know, lock back in a little bit, because you go Yankees, Marlins, like the rest of the schedule in the end of July and early August is not exactly, you know, it's not exactly a cakewalk. There's not a get right period. I know the
Marlins have come back to earth a little bit.
Well, thankfully so. We got to stop with the Marlins thing, but still, like, they have a pulse where mm-hmm. years past they haven't exactly had a pulse. And then, like, the Orioles are in there, and they got 4 against the Nats. So, look, it's time to knock out some of that nonsense. The Yankees have been down a little bit. You're not facing Judge this weekend. And you've lost 2 straight home series in an 11-game homestand to start the second half without playing the most inspiring baseball. So, it's a really, really – it's a really, really interesting time period as we are just – like, they need reinforcements, and it's so close. I think they can feel how close it is. And, like, they need reinforcements in, like, the worst way, both in the outfield, in the starting rotation, in the bullpen. We'll get more into it coming up towards the end of the podcast.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
This summer, I'm taking a new approach to styling the smallest spaces in my house with help from Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has the small space solutions that America's waited 250 years for, like retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, dinner party ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish, spacious, bobopedic sofas, and feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back in even the smallest rooms. Plus, I know that Bob's styles are backed by thousands of real five-star customer reviews, so I can trust that the furniture that I'm getting is not just affordable, but built to last. And the best part? Bob's Furniture ships fast, so I can enjoy my new styles all summer long. So when you're ready to ditch the furniture you're not excited about for the latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
But I do want to talk about Don Mattingly. And I know we talked about the messaging and getting this team to play better baseball, which was his whole mantra when he took over, and they currently are not playing better baseball. But we are starting to see some real warts here with what he does with his bullpen decisions and, you know, when to get a starter out. What have you thought about Don Mattingly's bullpen management, I would say, in the last three weeks?
It's been confounding. Like, there have been a lot of head-scratching moves or moves that, you know, when he makes it, go, oh, I don't know if I really would have done that. I mean, even something as simple as bringing in Duran at the end of Monday's game to get him one out. When it's not like he really needed work. He pitched a meaningless inning the day before just to get himself work. Like, that felt kind of odd. And, you know, he just doesn't seem to have a feel for it. Now, I don't know if it's kind of a Pandora's box situation where he also just doesn't really have the horses in the bullpen to get outs right now. I mean, you have Duran, and then after that, like, Kirkering's been kind of okay. Tim Meza has an ERA north of 11. In July, he's given up, I think, 8 earned runs in his last three appearances. He hasn't exactly been...
That's not PSAC baseball.
No, that's not great. That's not great. PSAC.
Let's lock in. Lock
Maybe
in.
Alvarado's going to lock back in, but he hasn't been great all year. So, I mean, like, it's not like he has a guy that you can say, oh, why didn't he bring him in? He's been shut down. But at the same point, like, the Nola thing, why are you bringing him back out for the six? Like, I thought 5 innings, 1 run, like, we're good. Like, let's go home. I guess 2 runs, right? And immediately it backfired, right? Like, single home run, it's over. Like, just immediately like that. Like, it just kind of felt obvious to everyone in the ballpark. And maybe Nola's different because he does have a resume, and maybe he is such a veteran that he commands respect, not necessarily to the level of Wheeler, but it's weird to kind of take someone with his resume out that early in a game. But that's who he is now, right? And if you're Don Mattingly and your whole reason for taking this job and your whole reason for, you know, wanting the job in the future is I played the game and I command respect in the clubhouse, then you have to make the tough decisions. And you have to tell a guy who maybe thinks he's hot right now, hey, you haven't really been that great this year. Maybe you don't get to go out for the sixth and we turn it over to the bullpen. The things that we worried about Don Mattingly when he got hired are really showing up.
Yeah. So I find the Mattingly thing interesting, and I actually feel like it's fair to present both sides, because I do think there is two sides to this thing. Like, with the Nola thing last night, he should have been out. It's Muncy Freeman to start that inning, but in Mattingly's defense, he was at 70 pitches to start the inning. Now, the fifth inning was a little hairy, but it was also some soft contact in there. It wasn't like balls were getting ripped all over. Like, we've seen Nola allow some hard contact just right after.
Yeah, and like 5 years ago, you wouldn't have thought twice about Nola rolling at that point.
Correct. So Nola's at 70 pitches. I think if he had a full stable of horses, so last night he's down Alvarado and Bolin because they pitched the last two nights. So I would have gone Meza to start it, just because. But then it's like Maze has also gotten shelled, and it would backfire because Nola is only at 5 innings and he's at 70 pitches. How do you pull him from the game? So there has been a lot of decisions with Mattingly where I have said that feels wrong. I think the Duran thing was he was already hot. You might as well bring him in rather than just like he's gonna be down anyway because he effectively warmed up to come in. So just let him come in and get the last out. I agree with you. It felt wrong, but I think that would be their justification for it. Like you might as well use him if you get him warm. Mm. But when you're down, they're down Banks right now, which isn't exactly, you know, I'm not saying there needs to be a parade down Broad Street because all these excuses because Tanner Banks is hurt. He also stinks. Backus has been horrible. So when you have like two left, you have one lefty last night in Mesa and Alvarado's down. Like he's kind of screwed from that perspective.
Because you also want to save Mesa for when Ohtani comes back up.
And you need him for later in the game when Ohtani comes up. I totally agree. So the Mattingly thing, we are definitely hashtag monitoring the situation. We are still back on maybe this is Alex Cora's job in the offseason because I agree with you. There has been head-scratching bullpen decisions. But in Don's defense, it's not like he has a stable of horses out there. He can open up the bullpen door and say, hey, go get me three outs. Now, I do think, and it was not the reason they lost last night, but I simply don't care. I do think they have to send Seth Johnson down just to get him out of the ballpark. Just say, hey, like your key card doesn't work. And Mattingly's like, where's Seth Johnson? Where's Seth? And they're like, we can't find him. I don't know. Because the wraparound Seth Johnson innings are going to make me blow a gasket. I can't stand watching that guy play baseball. I cannot. And he wears 51 for Randy Johnson, and I can't stand that. Locate. And then there's Kirkering. Kirkering is one of the most disappointing Philly athletes of my lifetime. I know that sounds a little overdramatic.
And it's a little hyperbolic.
A little bit. I understand that. But like, you want to talk about premium stuff and just not having the mental fortitude to get it done and use it. It's when you can look in Orion Kirkering's face when he knows he doesn't have it. And you just, it's a sinking feeling in your gut of, oh no, it's going to be one of those Kirkering outings. And he's confounding. He is confounding to me. Because I don't know why he's ditched the splitter. Like he kind of had at the beginning of the season. It was a relatively interesting pitch. And then he's just like, nah, I'm not going to use him. I'm going to get back to being me. And, you know, the walks are out of control. I think he's walked 23 guys in 38 innings or something along those
39
lines.
And a third. Yeah.
It's inexcusable. It's inexcusable. So Mattingly is in a tough spot of he's got a great closer. Jonathan Bolin has been a revelation. I mean, I heard the big John Walken for the first time on Tuesday. Just a phenomenal Walken song.
What a trade by Dombrowski, by the way. As Matt Strom carries an ERA north of 6 down there in Kansas City.
Well, we're starting to add some more good moves to the Dombrowski ledger. Although Keith Law had Starlin Gaba as the 48th best prospect in baseball today. So kind of heating up a little bit, but obviously Lizardo's Lizardo, so you're fine with that. But yeah, I would be perfectly okay crushing Mattingly if I felt like he had the proper guys out there to get the job done. And after August 3rd, maybe he will, and we could have an honest assessment of where we're at with Mattingly. I struggle to do it right now because I don't think he has many great options, and it's almost damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, I mean, like when you kind of try to piece things together for the bullpen, and you do it a lot in the postseason, but when you do it now, like if a starter doesn't go 7, you're going to have some dicey innings. I mean, we saw it on Monday night where Sanchez only went, you know, 5 or 5 and 3, whatever it was. And luckily your offense kind of took over and put up 10 runs, but it was kind of rough getting through, you know, innings 6 through 9 when you don't have the guys to do it. And I don't know if Tim Mesa is just exhausted. Like he's thrown 48 innings already this year. His career high is 52. So
Tim Mesa has thrown 48 innings this year.
Isn't that crazy?
Dude.
They're also, they're 12 and, I think I looked it up, they're like 12 and 24 when he pitches. Like, he gets a lot of mop-up duty for a guy who's been pretty good.
How has he thrown 48? I guess because Kirk Ring missed the first month of the year.
Yeah, he got a lot of time during, I think Rob Thompson kind of used him a lot because he had a lot of one and two inning.
I do think I have completely blacked out the first month of the season. I don't think I remember anything besides
45 innings. He has 45 innings this year, okay, which is still insane.
That's insane. Besides like Sanchez getting crushed in Chicago and the Giants series, I think I've blacked everything out from the 9-19 start. 45 innings of Tim Mesa is crazy. That is so many innings.
Yeah, 45 innings from him, 39 from Kirkering, and then Duran obviously has 34. But yeah, I mean, like, this isn't something he's ever necessarily done. Like, he was good in 23 in Toronto, but he had 50 total innings over the course of the year. So yeah. I wonder if there's just some fatigue setting in because he hasn't had this workload. But yeah, I mean, you just look across the bullpen right now, and I just don't know how you piece it together. Like, I don't think Don Mattingly's getting a good job, but I also don't think Dave Dombrowski's done necessarily a great job of giving him three or four guys that you feel confident that can come and get an out. And I don't know, Kirkering, as great as his stuff can be and is sometimes, I've never seen someone who just is a relief pitcher and doesn't have the mental fortitude to get through a tough inning. Like, that's really, to me, the hallmark of a good reliever is, oh man, two guys on, nobody out, got to get a couple strikeouts and really get out of this. And we saw it last year, right? Like, you couldn't trust him to bring him into an inning with a guy on base because he was giving up inherited runners all the time.
Well, he's the best reliever in baseball when they're up by three in like the seventh inning. That is Orion Kirkland will pitch a nine pitch inning in a scenario like that. I also feel like every time it's a 3-2 count in a big spot, easy walk. Just an non-competitive, like a little sweeper down or a fastball way out of the zone. And you look at it, it's like, because, you know, they'll be like, whoa, his ERA is like 2.37 or whatever. It's in the twos. Like, I don't care. There no one with eyes anymore. I was a Kirkland guy. I tried to defend him for a long time. But there's just too much sample size of him being in pretty big spots and not being able to get the job done. Like, last night wasn't even a big spot. I mean, it was a 5-3 game. It wasn't.
It was a classic Seth Johnson spot, and he couldn't get through it.
Yeah, it's always one and a third Seth. Any chance you can get to have a wraparound Seth, you just
got to get his up downs ready for the postseason.
Yeah.
You don't want a David Robertson situation again.
Now, I will say, you know, McFarland made his debut last night, and I think you saw some good, you saw some shaky. The shaky is, it's not like he was dotting the fastball. Now,
I don't know how you can control a fastball that moves that much.
It does move a lot. It does. Like, honestly, if I was catching him for some odd reason, I think I would just set up down the middle with the fastball and let it play. Like, if it's going to cut, if it's going to rise or sink, okay, and just get me to that sweeper. He leaves that sweeper up a little bit. I know this is like a 9-4 game, and the Dodgers were probably checked out of it, so it's not like the read too far into it. I thought he left it up a little bit a couple times. The command was not. I think his strike rate in the minors was like 40%, which is
not ideal.
Which is in the blue on. But there is a minor league savant now, which is very exciting.
Oh
yeah. There's a lot of big developments down in the minor leagues, which it's good stuff. But yeah, so now at least there is premium stuff, and he did show that it was a pretty good inning. And maybe as he gets his feet wet, the command comes back, and I certainly would be more interested in him than Seth Johnson. So maybe he's someone who could kind of factor in. I was glad, honestly, Tucker, that he's gotten to a game, because I thought they were going to bring him up, not pitch him, and then send him back down and still try to put on this facade that he needs work at Reading.
Did you see that he was the first Phillies pitcher to go right from AA to the majors since Francisco Morales in 2022?
Yes, another one of the baby boys. He's better than Francisco Morales. I feel pretty confident saying that.
Already, I think he's better than Francisco Morales. If he retired tomorrow, I would say better than Francisco Morales.
It was a good Mike Zagurski mention last night on the broadcast.
The hefty lefty.
the hefty lefty, the John Kruk lookalike, Mike Sigurski was a house, man. That's a reliever. You know what I mean? Like that's like my Heath Bell.
Like the one thing as we talk about baseball and everyone being more athletic and healthier and stuff, I miss the overweight reliever.
Oh, Todd Coffey getting a bloody nose running in from the outfield.
Yeah, like you're showing up hungover and you're just out there to throw as many fastballs as you can and then down like a dozen Advil on your way back to the clubhouse.
Well, you know the saying, Tucker, ibuprofen, I'd be shoving. You know, that was the Husky's model. Husky's motto back in 2013, 2014. Ibuprofen, I'd be shoving. Yeah, Harper was on Mookie's podcast yesterday, and he was talking about how he misses the 88 mile an hour like middle reliever that would just come in. Now like Seth Johnson's your middle reliever throwing 100.
It is crazy. Like I forget who was pitching, but Rincones like turned on a fastball last night and it was like 102, and like that's just kind of normal now.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. And I see like Chase Utley's been posting highlights on Instagram leading up to his Wall of Fame induction, and it's like, you're hitting doubles off like 87 mile per hour fastballs.
I know.
That's not impressive.
Well, and it's why I can't stand some of the older commentators. They're like, why can't these guys hit anymore? You know, why don't you go the opposite way a little bit? Why don't you choke up on the bat? I don't know.
Tony Gwynn only struck out 12 times a year.
I don't know. Have you seen these freaking guys? I don't think you'd hit them either. It's crazy. Well, Bonds to break the record. That lefty, mm-hmm. The lefty was thrown 84 to 86.
Yeah.
The entire at bat. What are we doing?
Well, like Jamie Moyer lasted 20 years throwing 83. I know. And even then it was kind of crazy, but like it's laughable that he was just able to get through two decades of a major league career doing that.
Why can't these guys hit? Why can't these scrubs hit anymore? They just put the bat on the baseball. I don't know. It's the 3,500 RPM slider. It's a little difficult. Okay. Cripes. But I will say it makes me even more impressed sometimes with the modern hitters, because like Nola will be down all game and like will go up and out of the zone. The second he misses one time, 450 feet.
Like, I've never seen someone whose every mistake just gets crushed the way Aaron Nola. Like, he has never gotten away with a mistake pitch.
No, and poor Muncy. I mean, not poor Muncy, but the poor Muncy at bat. It's a one hung changeup that just happened to stay up, and Muncy just has to deposit it 700 feet in center field. And, you know, I'm really getting just sick and tired of Max Muncy. How is he still doing this? First off, he looks like a dork, and he runs like a dork. All of it bothers me. And they, all of a sudden now he's like a stud third base, you know, defensively now. All because he got his little glasses and the prescription in there.
He's an OPS plus of like 130 each of the last 3 years. He's been unbelievable offensively.
Yeah, Tommy Edman has an OPS over 900. Nah, it's all good stuff.
No big deal.
Yeah, it actually does impress me though, the modern hitters, when it feels like they don't miss many mistakes. And, you know, I don't know. It's the railing against the modern hitters, I guess, just drives me a little nuts. I meant to bring that. That's what I was going to bring up real quick. And speaking of how the game's changed a lot, and I think you did Seltzer send this to us? I don't know. But the stat about how James Wood has already faced more pitchers in his career.
Oh, yeah, this year than Ted Williams did in his entire career.
Than Ted Williams. Like, of course you have a book on every pitcher. You see one or two a game.
Well, I remember, like, before he died, Pete Rose gave an interview, and he's like, hitting in the majors was easy because I just saw the same 10 guys every year for a decade. And it's like, yeah. Of course it was, but not anymore.
Yeah, yeah, game's changed. I don't know. I like modern baseball. It's just watching old highlights is jarring because of how
even like the managerial decisions. Like, I'll go back and watch like the 08 World Series and Joe Maddon, who was hailed as a genius at the time. It's like, why are you making that pitching move? Like, well, you're just leaving in a righty to face the top of the Phillies lineup, like, just because.
Well, I think there's one game down, is either one or two of that series where he Coast was the DH. Mm-hmm. And he, I think he pulled him, so they didn't have a catcher.
Yeah, they didn't have a backup catcher. Yeah. I think they pulled him for Greg Dobbs.
Yeah. Well, and Maddon, like, he finally caught up to him. Well, I think he caught up to him. He won the World Series in 16. But I remember talking about, like, how they managed Chapman was one of the worst managerial moves I've ever seen. Like the last two games were just horrendous. He,
yeah,
I don't know. And now it's like it's so funny. Joe Maddon was that. That's how he's viewed. And now he's like viewed as this old curmudgeon in a way.
Well, that's what happens when you go to the Angels.
Yeah.
You go to Anaheim, you aren't going to be viewed favorably.
Yeah, the game has changed. The game has changed. All right, some other things. Do you have a Tucker's bag?
I don't. Right. I did pull up a couple stats weekend just because I'm curious.
We'll get to it a little later. All right, so a couple other things I want to get to. It seems like there's a Brandon Marsh platoon is back. He's not just facing left-handed pitchers no matter what. Mattingly said that, hey, then we tried it. Essentially, what Mattingly said before the game yesterday was we tried it. And he was doing good for a little bit, but he has struggled against lefties. I think he's hitting 105 against them in the last like 20 or 25 at bats around there. So we might be back on a Marsh platoon against lefties. They might have platoons at every single spot in the outfield, left field, center field, right field, and
it's not because they have great outfielders.
No, not at all. Brian De La Cruz obviously has an opportunity. Seems like Rincones is just going to stay up here. I understand it on one hand. And the other thing that does hit me with that idea of a true Marsh platoon now is it does open up more avenues at the trade deadline to where, you know, kind of the thing that has been talked about and I, you know, kind of been thinking about is, would they have the ability to pull off a 21 like Braves deadline where they just go get a bunch of guys? You know, it's this version of Adam Duvall, Jorge Soler, Jock Peterson, and just whoever's hot is hot. And you take a couple shots on guys who have had down years but have a long pedigree, and you just stick them out there. Like Crawford's going to play a lot. Derek Hill, like I think that's a fine center field combo. But if you can go get two right-handed hitting outfielders, if you don't think Brian De La Cruz can, maybe a different left-handed hitting outfielder, because like I don't think Gabriel Rincones Jr. should be in a playoff series. I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but I don't think so. I think that's a little crazy, if you ask me. So there is an opportunity if they commit to the idea of Marsh being a platoon guy to possibly going and getting two outfielders rather than just one outfielder.
Yeah, and they kind of tried that last year, remember? And, you know, Castellanos obviously didn't like it, but that was a big thing the last 2 months of the season when they got Bader was, you know, they're platooning everybody. People are coming in and out. You're not starting every game in the outfield. They had five guys that they felt comfortable starting and depending on matchups, you know, playing out there. So it wouldn't necessarily be that foreign to this team.
Do you think that they should platoon Marsh, or should they let him kind of work his way through it against lefties?
I think they should. Like, the thing that worries me about Marsh more so than like Schwarber's been struggling, Harper's been struggling. We've seen Marsh struggle like this for prolonged periods of time, right? Like his first half and how good he was in May and June. That was really like an anomaly for his career. And you could say, well, that was the breakout. It's also like 28, right? Like he should be breaking out at this point in his career. He's not a young kid. So I do worry that he got overexposed against lefties. I do worry that, you know, people are now pitching more carefully to him now that he had that success he had the last couple months. And as a result, you kind of end up in a situation where he's not necessarily as good as he was the last couple months. He's not as bad as he was, but I don't know if I fully trust him to get things back on track the next 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're certainly on watch with Brandon Marsh.
And he's also been terrible in the postseason, too. Like, as great as he was in the first half of the season, if we're looking ahead to what this lineup looks like in the playoffs, I mean, I think he's, like, 1-for-22 in the last two playoffs. Like, not necessarily great.
That checks out. I mean, that checks out. I with Marsh, I really like him. I want him to be an everyday player. I'm like, I would love.
And he seems like a great teammate. Like he was on the bench, like hyping up Brian De La Cruz last night after he hit a home run.
He's 100% a great teammate. That is not a concern for me at all. I will always have a bit of a fear of the Marsh, like the other shoe to drop with the Marsh thing. And, you know, the clock striking midnight a little bit. Good player. Great against righties. Great in left field. But I do worry of a nosedive here. Hopefully he hits his way out of it and we're fine. And they really do have a big four. I don't know about the 5-100 that we were talking about, you know, a couple weeks ago. but I really hope he pulls his way out of it. But I'm okay doing what is best for the team at this point. And it does feel like getting him out of there against lefties is certainly good for the team. And maybe, again, that's something that Mattingly's going to have to manage, because there are some opportunities early in that game yesterday where he could have pulled the lever and gone to Marsh, and he didn't. He let Sosa bat against the righty. So
yeah, or even like if this is just a short-term thing to kind of get his head right and have him relax and try and figure out, you know, a week or two from now.
Yeah. I always forget Edmundo Sosa in the outfield platoon. How could I forget? All right, some other things here. The Stubbs injury is so weird.
Especially because your other backup catcher got injured last night, too.
Yeah, bad timing. So, Brian De La Cruz was coming up on Monday. It wasn't coming up. He was getting the call up on Monday, which means it was like planned in a way.
Right.
Then they're sitting around all day on Tuesday and don't announce that Stubbs is going on the IL with a wrist injury or wrist inflammation until 4:50. Like, what did you have to wait around for? Did you have to call everyone in the office? All right, how's your wrist? Your wrist is banged up a little bit.
How'd you inflame your wrist during the All-Star break?
Exactly. So I think they're trying to make a trade. Like they are trying to get someone for Saturday. If they can't get a deal done, then it's going to be Brian Geller, not Brad Geller, who is a journeyman guy. He's 32, he's pitching well at AAA, but I have no big take on Brian Geller. Little fishy, the whole Stubbs injury and the fifth starter mystery, and feels like they're going to try to get a deal done. And if they can't, it's going to be Brian Geller, but that's one to, I think, kind of look for in the next 2 days.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And then the other thing I want to get to before we get to Tucker's bag and get out of here is the Matt Gelb report from this morning. And he said, he wrote, "Of late, the Phillies have been more willing to discuss higher caliber arms, the kind of pitcher who would be capable of starting a postseason game." Tucker, what's your reaction to that?
Isn't that the one thing this team has? Right, like if you were to start with like, hey, what are the Phillies good at? They have good starting pitchers capable of starting a postseason game. Like, I get, you know, maybe you want to strengthen your strength, and maybe that's the path of least resistance. But like, you're not going out and getting Skubal for like pennies on the dollar, right? Like, anyone that's good, like other teams who are much more needy for starting pitching are going to outbid you. They're going to drive up to the price where you're going to have to give up, you know, a huge amount of prospects. I just don't think it really makes any sense. Like, I get it, and it sounds great. Like, imagine a 1-4 of Wheeler, Sanchez, Lizardo, and another guy like that. But
Joe Ryan.
Yeah, like, it doesn't make sense to me, unless you really think this team can go deep. But, like, it would be funny to me, you go into a wild card series with, you know, those four starting pitchers, and you lose the first two games 2-1, and, like, that's it, you're done.
Yeah,
and you wasted all those prospects on a guy who didn't even make it into a postseason game. Now, I guess you could argue, well, you know, if you get another guy, maybe you have guys coming out of the bullpen and things like that. But I just feel like the needs for this team are so pressing that pushing all your chips in for a guy who, I don't know, unless he's your third starter, you're bumping Lizardo to four. Like, I just don't think adding a fourth starter is necessarily what this team needs.
I am perplexed. It is strengthening your strength, and I understand that a starter influences an entire game, and if you have four, great, awesome. You had four last year that were great, and it didn't matter because you couldn't hit. if they go and trade real assets for a real starter, you know, Joe Ryan of the world, if you want someone that is controllable instead of Tarek Skubal, if they trade what it takes for 12 starts to Tarek Skubal, I'm going to blow a gasket. They can't do it. You want to go trade for Joe Ryan? Awesome. I mean, Joe Ryan's really good. There's some other starting pitchers I'm perfectly fine. I'm fine trading for a starting pitcher. There's been this thing recently, I feel like, where, and I've heard a little bit on the station, Twitter, talking to people, of I'm fine with where I'm at with the bats. And I think that is one of the most insane takes you could have. Like, they are unbelievably deficient in the lineup. Unbelievably deficient. Like, boom. We're going to do it again with him in the middle of the lineup. I great that he had a good game last night. I can't believe we're going to be back with Bohm. Stotts, hit or miss. He's fine. He's like a 250 hitter perpetually now. And then you get to JT, who has, of course, the year that Hunter Goodman, Adley, and Shea Langeliers might be available. We just gave the 35-year-old catcher 3 years. And I think what he does behind the plate is undervalued, all that good stuff. But his OPS is in the fives, and he is... To his credit, he's a good clutch hitter. But if you can go and add one real bat, someone that could influence every game, that's what they have to do. And that's not even getting started on the bullpen. Imagine if you could add another real bullpen piece to this. They're not doing the Mason Miller thing. I mean, Mason Miller is a pipe dream. It's he'd be a great eighth inning guy, you know? But bullpen. And it's lineup. It's an outfielder, maybe even two. The starting pitcher thing, I know that Dubrowski is a starting pitching guy. I know that pitching wins. I've seen this offense for far too long just lay down like dogs in the postseason, to where if they don't get another real bat, I mean, they've been more deficient this year, it feels like, than even in the last couple of years offensively. I don't get it. I just don't get it, Tucker.
And also, like, you've seen this team with the stacked rotation lose playoff series before. Like, think about the Mets series in 2024. You lost that because your bullpen sucked and your offense couldn't get any clutch hits, right? Like, Wheeler was great in game one. Game two, obviously, was a high-scoring game. Game three, Nola, it was kind of iffy. But then Suarez threw, I think, five shutout in game four before the bullpen blew it. Like, you went into that series with great starting pitching, but your bullpen and offense kind of sucked. And at this point, you're really in that same boat where, okay, great. Like, you have three horses at the top of your rotation where you know that they can go out and they can give you a really strong outing. But what are we going to do? Are we going to go against the Dodgers again and go 12 innings with only run scored? Like, that's kind of where you're ending up. We're like, oh man, well, the pitching's great. But even that, it's not, because you don't have the depth in the bullpen to outlast other teams waiting for the offense to come around.
Well, and what about the scenario? Mr. Let's go trade for another starting pitcher instead of getting some real bullpen out. What if, crazy concept, Sanchez can only go six? What if Wheeler can only go six? Like, Wheeler, for as great as Wheeler's been, great. A lot more six innings than 7-8. For as great as Sanchez has been since the scoreless streak, little shaky. Lot of base hits. Lot more six innings rather than eight innings. So we can talk about the horses you have, and they have legitimate horses, but even those guys have been more six innings rather than 7-8. And right now, if they go six innings in a postseason start, who are you handing the ball to in the seventh and eighth to get the ball to Duran? Bolin's one. Alvarado has had a good three outings in a row. I'm much more interested in shortening the game and trying to get, because again, you don't have Brad Keller. He's not coming back. And you need a Brad Keller replacement. You know, like, they've been interested in Luke Weaver, it seems like. I actually wouldn't mind a reunion with Jeff Hoffman, as the K percentage is still really high. Chase rate still really high. The overall number's not great. But I think his FIP's 2.6, Tucker. Mm. So you have to factor
that. He's FIPping it up there in Toronto.
Yeah. So it would be a huge, to me, it's a huge miscalculation, And I hope this is not one big thing to try to go and push your chips in and go get Skubal. I'm sure they would love to get Skubal, and Skubal's awesome, but it, it's just a misuse of resources for a team that has so many holes.
Yeah, and it's not like you have equal deficiencies across the board, right? Like, it's not like you're looking at your team now and, oh, man, we're an 86-win team, but, you know, if we get one guy, we can really push ourselves over at the top. Like, you have a very clear strength on this roster, which is your starting pitcher. You have a really clear deficiency at both offensively and in your bullpen. I mean, you have the worst OPS plus in the National League right now. Like, your OPS plus right now as a team is 88. You have three guys who have really hit well for most of the season. They haven't. The last 2 weeks, like, what if you go into the postseason and Schwarber doesn't hit like he did at, you know, the beginning of the 22 and 23 postseason? Like, that's it. It's kind of over if Schwarber isn't hitting, if Harper isn't hitting. And maybe you would argue, well, if they aren't hitting, then you don't have a chance anyway, no matter who's hitting 6, 7, 8, 9 in your lineup. But you have to get guys who can put together quality at bats and grind down pitchers and move guys. Like, I think that's the big issue for me with this team right now, especially offensively. They just don't hit situationally all that well. And that feels like an old man thing to say, but.
Well, it's true, though.
It's true.
They don't do the little things well. Which
need some small ball.
The theme of this.
Why aren't we bunting? Why aren't we moving, guys?
Yeah, I'm good on that. The disaster scenario is you trade for a guy as a fourth starter, and he doesn't even pitch because you lose the first three games of the first round.
Yep.
And he doesn't even get
He's it. Just sitting out there in the bullpen.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, last thing on rotation, encouraging report yesterday from Bob Nightingale that Philly's officials privately and quietly think that Zach Wheeler is going to change his decision of retiring after next year. Obviously, we'll see what next year is like, but that is potentially huge. I mean, he's pitching at a great level. I think the calculus has changed for Wheeler from the standpoint of he possibly has a chance to be in Cooperstown, and the way that he keeps pitching, the fact that he came back from this and he's back to being Zach Wheeler is awesome. And if they can convince him, hey, two more years, maybe that gets you in Cooperstown. The future of the rotation is in a very, very healthy spot if you go Wheeler, Sanchez, Lizardo. And then if they keep Gage, you know, Gage kind of right there, and maybe Painter and Nola as well. So as long as you have those three at the top, I think it really helps keep your window open as a franchise.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, like, it almost becomes a crowded room if he sticks around for a while, and maybe Lizardo and Sanchez probably jump him as he ages and declines. But I mean, yeah, you have three guys at the top of your rotation locked up long term. You have Nola locked up long term. I mean, it becomes almost crowded to the point where, you know, obviously the team only has four legitimate starting pitchers now, so they aren't in a position to be getting rid of guys because they just have an abundance of them. But I don't know. It'll be interesting 3 years from now to see those three guys at the top of the rotation. If Nola's still pitching, obviously he's under contract, but then, you know, where does Gage Wood fit in? Where does Painter fit in if he's still around at that point? I mean, in theory, you have like six or seven guys who could be starting pitchers for the 2029 Phillies.
Yeah. The future of the pitching side is actually in a pretty good spot. You know, they have some reliever prospects that can help if they ever let them pitch in the big leagues. Pretty good spot, I think, on the pitching side. And they're all heating up right before the deadline. Like, Bowker shoved. Matthew Fisher shoved again. So the future of the rotation, very, very good hands. All right, Tucker, what do you got for me? Some stats you looked up.
Situational hitting, back to that.
Oh, nice.
8 for 43 with the runners in scoring position since the All-Star break.
Good.
Not great. Good.
Were they best in baseball in June in that from that
category? I think they were. Yeah.
Yeah.
They went 0 for 15 in one of the games against the Mets, which really inflates that number. But, you know,
it just checks out, though.
Yeah. And the other thing I looked at, like, Harper, Schwarber, Marsh are three All-Stars. They each have three hits and one home run since the All-Star break.
Checks out.
Like, I don't know if they're tired because they actually had to work. It's not like you went anywhere. You stayed home. But yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why they struggled against the Mets and they struggled against the Dodgers, he scored one run in three or four losses, partially because the three guys that you push to the top of your lineup that should be hitting just haven't been.
Yeah, well, you hear all this and you're like, you know what? Let's go get Joe Ryan. Let's go get a starting
pitcher. But the real issue is they need starting pitching.
The real issue is
it's not that the guy who has played at an MVP level for the last year and a half is struggling a little bit. And the guy who was supposed to be elite is struggling a little bit.
Don't make that lineup a little bit longer with a real bat. Let's go.
No, if you're going to October, you need Rincona sitting 6 or 7.
Oh, a dream.
You need your 216 catcher hitting 5, and you need a quad A right fielder hitting 6.
I think the Dodgers are shaking in their shorts that Rincona might be on the playoff roster. Like, how are we supposed to beat this? He did almost turn around 102 mile an hour fastball from our
just yanked it into the seats
from our mop up guy. it's disgusting.
It was a warning shot.
It was. You got anything else?
No, that's about it.
All right. Yeah, I think we can say this pretty confidently. The Phillies didn't want to show their best against the Dodgers. This whole thing was a ruse for October.
A Trojan horse, if you will.
Yeah, they're gonna lock back in and make sure that when October rolls around, they'll be good to go. Well, Tucker, I think it was a cathartic podcast. What a frustrating.
I feel better.
Yeah, listen, a nice little off day to reset. Maybe we get a deal today as they are on the quest to find a fifth starter. Who is the guy? I loved him. He's an old Tigers pitcher through the no-hitter, and he's really good for us at the beginning of 24.
I looked him up the other day because when we were talking swingmen, he was like the perfect swing guy.
He was awesome. He was awesome.
In 24, right?
Yeah.
And he got hurt. He was a starter for a little bit, and I'm going to look at his name. It's Turnbull.
Turnbull.
Spencer Turnbull.
Turnbull. I love Spencer Turnbull. They need him back. Listen, Carrasco just signed overseas. Bring back Cookie Carrasco. Also, why, Cookie? You know, I mean, you were in the Cliff Lee trade.
That was a long time ago.
2009. Oh, man. And I did find out yesterday because of Buzz.
Yeah, you have to make sure you mention Buzz. He seemed very upset by that.
I said I did just figure it out. I didn't have to say credit to Buzz. Did you know this whole time that Rob Thompson was at third base when he's waving Johnny Damon after the...
No, I never thought about it. When I saw the video, I'm like, well, that makes sense. That was his job.
Yeah, man. Old Topper. And it's so funny. Topper was there. In 08, Bo was in the Dodgers dugout for the
Bo with
thing.
The Dodgers is still like a weird thing to
well,
see.
It's the funniest. It's so baseball, it hurts. Bo was in their dugout, and Davey Lopes is our first base coach.
And Victorino has them fighting each other.
And they obviously had the famous moment together, you know, that goes down as like an awful day in Phillies lore because Lopes, you know, beat the ball out and the Phillies missed the playoffs. And it's just the symmetry of baseball, just the best. All right. That's going to do it for us. I don't think there'll be a pod until Monday unless there's a trade. So I'm pretty sure Seltzer's back for that one. But hey,
I think he is.
Okay.
I think he gets another Fish concert this weekend, but he'll be back next week.
Ooh, feels like a tired spot. Feels like a tired spot. All right. That's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon here on the High Hopes Podcast.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.